Episode 78.
So I think the fear of security and compliance, being compliant and being able to sell the car, is going to be the bigger driver to enable a car to have a software update rather than a new services or new opportunity or new business model. At the end, we are driving to the same, but I think the mandate is required that every citizen's safety and compliance must be guaranteed. And that's a gold standard that cannot be left up to OEM to decide what's the level of security for car A or car B.
Welcome to Remarkable Results Radio's audio replay of this face-to-face video roundtable.
Hello, aftermarketers. Carm Capriotto here with the audio-only version of this face-to-face video podcast brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts and Garage Gurus. For serious technical training and support, online, on-site, and on-demand, Garage Gurus is everything you need to know. So find out more at fmgarageguros.com. To say you're in for a deep and powerful discussion about the connected car is an understatement. Your panel today consists of four very connected individuals when it comes to the connected car. With vehicle technology and car manufacturers being a big part of the Consumer Electronics Show in early 2016, it demonstrates the importance of the high-tech connected car. As the future unfolds, with rapidly evolving technology as the centerpiece of performance and connectivity, the issues of security, updatability, telematics, the Internet of Things, warranty, databases, recalls, new operating business models, regulatory bodies, Silicon Valley, the car manufacturers, and even Google and Apple are all real-world concerns. All of these topics and more are discussed in a very eye-opening episode where concepts, ideas, and possibilities are explored, and it may just make you sit up and pay attention to the impact technology will have on the future and on decisions being made today for the connected car. See the show notes on detailed bios on my guests. They include Roger Lanto, Associate Director, Global Automotive Practice. You also heard Roger in his own episode right here on the Remarkable Results podcast on episode 40. He'll also become the moderator of the show. Also, David Miller, Chief Security Officer of Covisint. Mahbubul Alam, CTO of Movimento Group, is with us. And also John Ellis, Founder and Managing Director of Ellis & Associates. Well, here we go. Buckle up. Hello, everyone. Carm Capriotto here with a face-to-face video podcast. And boy, do I have a dynamic bunch of honoraries here today. And I'll get into that in a minute. The reason we do face-to-face video podcasts is to connect with our podcast audience and bring engaging and exciting conversation. Boy, let's get right to it because this is going to be an unbelievable episode. Roger Lanto, and he's also going to be the co-host. Roger is an Associate Director of Global Automotive Practice from Strategy Analytics. It's a global research and consulting firm that provides insights and strategic business solutions to companies operating at the convergence of information, communications, and entertainment technologies. Roger was with me in episode 40. Now, there's a brainiac. You got to listen to this, episode 40. Go back into the archives and listen to that. Now we have John Ellis. John, say hello to everyone. In a few
Good
words,
morning.
John is a technologist, founder, board member, entrepreneur, software developer. John Ellis is a seasoned executive with over 25 years of experience in telecommunications, automotive, connected devices, ecosystems, embedded products, open source, and product management in global multicultural settings. Founder and principal of a management consulting practice, Ellis & Associates, where their research is to provide expertise and hands-on execution in a broad range of areas, and now focuses on the world where automotive, consumer, connectivity, and software all intersect. Mr. Ellis is also a university adjunct professor delivering customized training in international business, sales, marketing, and finance. He is an advisory board member of the Connected Car Expo at the Los Angeles Auto Show. And
good morning.
John, good morning. I'm going to go to my friend Mahbubul Alam. Did I say that right?
You got it.
Mahbubul is a CTO of Movimento Group.
That's correct.
He joined Movimento, a CTO, in 2015, and is responsible for aligning automotive and information technology with corporate strategy to enable Movimento to better lead the automotive industry's transition to software-defined vehicles. A 17-year industry veteran, Mabubel works to maximize the potential of secure over-the-air OTA updates. Wow, that's so important. And enable new connected services for the vehicle. Previously, Mabubel led Cisco Systems strategy in LOT. Is that right? LOT and M2M?
IoT.
IoT, yeah, that's what I thought. IoT and M2M, where he pioneered and developed his business from the ground up through vision, strategy, platform, and execution. He also helped initiate the company's smart connected vehicle roadmap. Before joining Cisco, Mabubel held technical leader positions at Siemens and worked as a technical advisor to the Dutch government. And you are where right now?
I'm in Denmark right now, but I'm from San Jose, California. Yeah.
Amazing, amazing stuff. Mr. Miller directs the identity management offering at Covisint, which currently secures access for automotive, healthcare, energy, and government customers. Mr. Miller has been with Covisint since its inception, architecting its federation solutions and implementing the first true identity network for the auto industry. Love to know about that. Mr. Miller has more than 20 years' experience in the information technology and automotive industries. And prior to Covisint, he served as director of operations for GM Trade Exchange, managing the implementation and architecture of GM's automotive exchange. And his resume is like so long. So on the show notes page, I'll have all the longer bios of all these esteemed guys. Well, we're here to talk about behind the scenes of the connected car. And you guys are at a grassroots level where us typical aftermarket leaders just wouldn't know. So Raj brought this thing to me just yesterday. It's 24 hours since we decided to do this. And I am thrilled that it came off. I believe you would agree that being a top tech is real hard work. Keeping up is a full-time gig, considering vehicle technology, repair procedures, and diagnostics. It's refreshing to know that Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Guru is there for you. It's been designed by and for technicians, the best in the industry. And did you know there's no other comprehensive program like this anywhere? A big part of the program is the nationwide network of Guru's on-site training and technology centers. There, you can get your hands dirty with the equipment and tools you use every day in real work-related situations. When online is your perfect way to learn, do it with Guru's 24/7 online academy with a huge catalog of training course options. And with the Guru's on-the-go technology fleet, they bring the latest products and demos right to your shop. And this year, you get free stuff from the Garage Rewards Loyalty Program. You earn points towards gear from your favorite Federal Mogul Motor Parts' brands. And what is really great, it costs nothing to join, and you'll start earning points immediately. So head on over to fmgarageGurus.com and learn all about Garage Guru's training, support, and get in on the rewards.
I was giving a little preamble about CES being automotive, very automotive centric this year, with 8 or 9 OEMs showing new cars and making announcements here, and with booth space, including Faraday Future, kind of an interesting case in and of itself, and about 151 suppliers with exhibit space, and then dozens of companies that are in hotel suites all over the city. Cars are kind of taking over the show, which is interesting in the context of the aftermarket kind of taking a hit in recent years. But maybe we'll have a new aftermarket after this year's CES. But that's the context and the motivation for this conversation, because I obviously, as part of what I do for a living, what we all do, is I follow developments in this space. And there seems to be a lot of confusion, a little bit of fear mongering, and just complete perplexity about what is really going on in the car. And where I think there is confusion, that confusion does turn into fear, and then people start calling for laws and regulations before we even have gotten anywhere in connecting cars. It's so early days. So that's why I wanted to have this conversation, you know, to sort of understand where things really stand today, and what is happening behind the scenes. And each of you has a unique perspective, has different experiences to bring to this conversation. And in particular, I guess the idea that's really in my mind is we hear a lot of stories about the kind of data that car companies are collecting. I'd like to believe, actually, that they are collecting a lot of data, but I don't think they actually are collecting very much. And it's a very much a new space for these guys. They're being asked to do something that they're kind of struggling to get their arms around. So if each of you could kind of give me your perspective on what you see going on behind the scenes, where we're kind of making some progress, where we have made some progress, and where this is going. And I'm going to kind of go in from Dave to Mabubal to John in that respect. Dave, you have a background with a car company, as does John. So I think you have a unique perspective on what is happening behind the scenes. So can you sort of, you know, pull back the curtain a little bit on what is going on behind the scenes? What is happening with let's start with this. What does cloud service mean for the car and cloud and kind of big data? What's happening there? What should be happening there?
Yeah. So if you look at what vehicles are collecting, I think we really need to almost separate it into two really distinct sets of data streams, right? There's the car data stream. That's what the engineers care about. That's sensors and things that help them with warranty information and help them determine how your car is functioning, those things. And then there's kind of the owner-centric data, right? So that's my Facebook connection and my Twitter connection and all of the things that I do. Location data may be part of that. I think that kind of goes back and forth. And I think that the way that we not just collect, but the way that we end up having to secure that information is going to be really separate. So, you know, on the one hand, I think car information will go back to the OEMs. There will always be this connection where OEMs will have the ability to remotely diagnose or take a look at big data type of things on failure rates of specific things in the vehicle.
I want to believe that, but where are we today? I mean, are car companies really getting that data? I mean, because I would expect that they would be able to anticipate problems before they happen. But what we're hearing about is car companies are not connected, right? They can't find the owners of the current cars that have recalls. They can't identify where these cars right. are, and they're life-threatening, you know, propositions.
Yeah, so unfortunately or fortunately, whichever way you want to look at it, depends on which car company you're talking about, right?
So exactly, yes.
If you look at Tesla, they're unbelievably connected. They can tell you everything about your vehicle, where it is, how it is running, right? We all remember the news article where the reporter said that his battery ran dead, and they said, yeah, we looked it up, and you're actually wrong, so because we know exactly what you're doing. If you look at other vehicle manufacturers, there's less. Although our experience has been that if you look at electric vehicles provided by all of the manufacturers, they seem to be more connected, at least in the phone home, keep track of things.
So if we're talking about electric vehicles, isn't that basically because the car companies have decided, oh, gee, we need to be connected to these cars because the customer needs to know if they have enough range to get to the next charge?
Yeah, and I think a lot of it also is the OEMs want to know exactly how they work in real-world situations, and they're tracking a significantly larger amount of a data set in order for them to be able to make the vehicles better. It's a new experience for everyone, these, you know, completely electric vehicles, right? I think when you look at the other side, which is the my tweets and all of that, I don't actually think they're doing much of anything with that information. They're not really spying on owners about what it is they do. Although I have certainly heard rumblings from OEMs that they would like to find a way to monetize the information about owners in order to help them also.
So I'm going to ask you one more clarification question, and then I'm going to shift it to Mabubal. And that is, my impression is that a typical car company has probably a dozen or two dozen databases for managing the vehicles and the customers across multiple, you know, groups within the organization, and there seems to be a bit of a struggle in, I'll use a word that I think you prefer to use, there's a struggle to orchestrate this information and put it to work and coordinate this so that there's a consistent communication with the customer, so that it's a pleasing experience and we don't have this fear-mongering and confusion and negative aspect to it. Where is the industry in terms of, first of all, do you agree with my characterization, and where do you feel the industry is in terms of coordinating and orchestrating all of this information for the customer's benefit?
So you're absolutely right that the companies that are the older legacy OEMs, one of their internal problems is they have databases of information, certainly about owners, in lots of different divisions, and everybody wants to keep their own information. And harmonizing or orchestrating that all in one spot is a challenge for them, and it's a back office challenge. It's much, much less of a connected vehicle challenge. And I think it's one of the reasons why some of the up and coming vehicle companies, right, the Teslas, who kind of built from nothing, have a much better track of their owners than would a General Motors or a Ford, for example.
So there is a 900-pound gorilla in the room. No, it's not John. It's dealers, but I'm going to hold off the dealer question until we get to John, because I think he probably has a unique perspective there. And I mentioned that in particular because, Tesla really doesn't have to worry about independent franchise dealers and the aftermarket. But Mabubal, how do you approach this debate and this struggle to orchestrate all of this information, to coordinate these databases, to coordinate internal divisions and groups that are sort of, you know, smokestacked, siloed within car companies?
Yeah, thank you, Roger. I hope you all can hear me. Okay, so what's happening in the industry? Let's take a step back and understand what's really happening. It's really a transformation happening. There's a huge transformation in the architecture. So you have a legacy architecture and a new architecture. And reality is that people who have the existing architecture has to migrate towards a new architecture compared to some of the solution that Dave was talking about, Tesla, who had a clean slate and they could build their vehicle like a computer on wheels. So the rest don't have that advantage that they can just forget the
By architecture, certain things pop into my head, but yeah. just for the purposes and benefit of the audience, when I hear you say architecture, I'm thinking kind of a PC architecture, you know, one kind of network with maybe virtualized, protected areas on that network, whereas now we have multiple networks and firewalled areas.
So if you look at a car, if you take a step back, if you look at a car, it has about 7 to 8 networks, about 15 to 20 kilos of wiring harnesses for each of those networks. So it was built like a hamburger as audio system, video.
I haven't heard that analogy before.
Yeah, you know, just stack up the hamburger. How many layers of burgers?
But it's actually even worse than that because the different networks serve different purposes. They operate at different capacities and speeds and are sending different kinds of information. It's not all time-stamped, et cetera.
Correct. So that shows about the history of the automotive, that they just build upon it. Now they have come to a critical stage where basically they have to think about once you start connecting anything. By definition, when you connect something, you need a continuous updates because connectivity creates a need for other, not only for the people to connect, but also other people to connect who are unwanted. So there is a continuous evolution of a software. So just like your smartphone or your Mac, there is no one software. You keep on getting a new release, next version, because of bug fixes or security gaps. So as the vehicle is getting more and more electronics, more and more software, they need this ability to update the software in the car. So that is the transition that I was talking about. When you have a hamburger layer, the car was sold and the OEMs were happy that the car was sold and they hope that the warranty period is limited and there's hardly any recall, to a software platform or a computer platform where you have to support that software over its lifetime. We are constantly getting updates on your Android or your iPhone or your Mac or your PC. So this architecture also means that this distributed computer that is there today, because hamburger means distributed computers, about 70 to 100 microprocessors are existing in a traditional car. Whereas if you look at the modern vehicles, which are starting from clean slate, they are less than 20 to microprocessors. So they are super ECU. So they are consolidating a lot of the ECUs into a single ECU. So, and then they're also putting enough memories and buffer capability so that you can do updates for next 7-8 years. So this is the architecture, what we are talking about between the old architecture and new architecture. And as this is happening for the car company, you got the mobility come into play. You got the cloud computing coming into it. We got the Internet of Things, which is sensors and collecting data from the vehicle. All of those all at the same time. So this is actually a huge task for the car company, because they are not challenged by one domain, not only by mobility, not only by the cloud and the apps and the services, but also from the IoT aspects and the security that comes along with it. So this is a very, very big challenge. And I think they are trying to have different groups trying to address each one, because it's the expertise of Piston and software are very different. So you got this huge different initiatives that are happening in parallel, and hopefully they will come together.
So I kind of left the Internet of Things out of it, because we're kind of early days, correct, for Internet of Things conversation?
Well, if you talk about data collection, that it is by definition of Internet of Things. Internet of Things is about sensors. A sensor's ability to collect data and actuate. So you are collecting the data. You cannot. So what are you collecting about? So there are parts of the Internet of Things. I don't want to only associate Internet of Things with wearable technology, but there is also other Internet of Things as machine data, as Dave talked about. There are two sets of data.
Well, I just mean all the standard setting activity that's yet to be completed. There are multiple Internet of Things protocols and standards, and it seems like the issue of security and software updating is a little bit higher priority. Now, the final issue, if you could address, is it strikes me that we need software updating immediately, right. But we can't get it immediately in this wonderful industry. So, is there some way to retrofit cars? I don't think so. I'm a little skeptical.
No, there is always the two. As I said, think about this is not the first time we have seen in the industry where we have a transition. Remember the old days of TDM, the voice calling and the voice over IP. As we went from the traditional circuit switch call to voice over IP, there was a transition of both. We had to live with both. The auto industry is going with the same thing. We know that the new architecture requires enough computation and storage in order to update the software. But what do you do with the existing ones? So you have to think about a transition solution that is that can already address some of the needs. And that's where the smartphone comes into play. If you think about the role of smartphone, it has replaced your wallet. You are able to pay. Payment systems are done over wallet. The role of the smartphone is beginning to replace your key fobs. You can start your car with your smartphone. The role of the smartphone is also for car sharing. You can get the e-token to open up the car. The role of the smartphone can also play a role to download that software that is essential. And then once you go into the vehicle, if you have Bluetooth or NFC connection, you should be able to update that. So that is a retroactive OT or retrofitting existing vehicle with minimum Bluetooth or NFC capability to take advantage of the over-the-air software update. That is possible. The industry needs to focus on now, here and now, on those smartphone-based technology while providing the end-to-end security. So but using the phone as a way to download instead of a USB dongle and asking the people go and plug it into your car. So there are ways to do that, and I think the industry needs to focus on that. And the new architecture has to absolutely be mandated that we should have embedded OTA solution from day zero.
Ah, now there's a mandate I haven't heard about. Now, I know John is champing at the bit, but I just wanted to check whether Dave had any thoughts with regard to what Mabubal had to say. Did you want to add anything to what Mabubal had to say?
Yeah, I when you brought up the whole issue about the Internet of Things, right, you know, one of the big arguments, and certainly in the industry, is a vehicle a thing or is it not a thing? And one of the things that I've at least been trying to push is this idea of thinking of a vehicle as kind of an ecosystem of things, much like my house would be that. Sure. It is a container of lots of other things. And from that standpoint, it is not just important that all of those things work together. It's important that the security that is within that vehicle that stops folks from taking advantage of all of the connected items in that vehicle is a little different than the individual security for each individual thing in the vehicle.
Yeah, my sense is we're not that far from a world where the different parts of the car are sort of having handshakes with each other. Are you supposed to be here? You know, do we agree? Are we talking the same language? Yeah. I'm here. I belong. You know, okay, we'll let you in. You know, we'll let you on the network. You're cool.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
I believe you would agree that being a top tech is hard work. Keeping up is a full-time gig, considering vehicle technology, repair procedures, and diagnostics. It's refreshing to know that Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Guru is there for you. It's been designed by and for technicians, the best in the industry. And did you know there's no other comprehensive program like this anywhere? A big part of the program is the nationwide network of Guru's on-site training and technology centers. And there, you get your hands dirty with the equipment and tools you use every day in real work-related situations. And if these great training programs aren't enough, you've got the Guru's On Demand app for quick, accurate assistance and information. And when the phone is just perfect, there's the ASE-certified bilingual Guru's On Call there to help. And this year, you get free stuff from the Garage Rewards loyalty program. You earn points towards gear from your favorite Federal Mogul Motor Parts' brand. And what is really great, it costs nothing to join, and you'll start earning points immediately. Head on over to fmgarageGurus.com and learn all about Garage Guru's training, support, and get in on the rewards.
All right, John, I know you're percolating with ideas and thoughts to contribute to what Mabubo and Dave have had to say. And so I just want to get out of your way and let you have at it. So what are your thoughts in this conversation?
Well, first off, good morning to everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Great.
You're coming through great.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. So I give kudos to Mabubo. I mean, he's saying architecture changes, and all the conversations that we have heard to date are always about the technical problems. I'm going to even go one step further back from Mabubo. When we talk about his hamburger, I'm going to go to the restaurant. Let's go talk about the restaurant that's serving the hamburger. The business model is not appropriate for the new world that we're talking about. The business model today is a ship and forget business model. Roger, you know, I've talked about that in the past. Ship and forget means I build it and I ship it and I forget about it at the point that I've sold it. That means I've put all my things together. Because until this such time as we actually can fix that, right now what people do, and Boo-Boo talked about it and Dave even talked about it, software and fixing and connecting and data is all done right now for warranty. Warranty is a penalty. Warranty is when something goes wrong. And so we've created a business model where we celebrate point of sale, optimize, and we're done. And the world that is coming, the world that Mabu was talking about from the technical side, is this world of ship and remember. And everything has to change for ship and remember. How you optimize, what you optimize, how you buy, what you purchase. The idea that a product is never really done. Well, sorry, that there's two pieces of a product. There's the physical embodiment of the product, and it's done. And then there's software embodiment that's never done. There's a point in time when you sell it, and then there's a continuation of that product and experience. And unfortunately, the companies have not yet figured out how to get there. Now, mind you, I'm not blaming them. They are not the only ones, right? Every industry who has had these durable goods, ship and forget business models has struggled to transform themselves to ship and remember. In fact, there's very, very few companies who've actually done it really well. In fact, the list is very, very small of companies who've done it really, really well. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. But until and as such time as that happens, ship and forget is going to continually bite us in the Achilles heel. And I hold the hypothesis that we will never get secure vehicles or an ongoing sense of security until we actually fix that.
So there's a couple of issues at stake here. Number one, Mabubo talked about actually using a smartphone connection for software updates. And John, with your Ford background, I want to get your feedback on that question. There's also a bit of a challenge. We're at this point in time where we need to be connected more than ever to the customer. But the reality is that cars generally speaking, there's not a lot that goes wrong with cars, aside from the recalls. You can go for years without visiting the dealer. The service cycles have gotten longer and longer, so it's even more challenging to get the customer to come back to the dealer. Now, those two points of context bear to be borne in mind. We do have a question from a listener. I have a Ford F-150 14, and they just came out with way better sync, but it's not backwardly compatible with earlier models. Yeah, John, this sounds a little familiar. What options do I have? So if you could respond to all of that, what kind of thoughts does that inspire? What I described about having less reason to interact with the customer at the very time when we need to be more connected than ever to the customer.
So for the questioner, I'll leave it. I'm not sure when you say what options do I have. Are you trying to, when you say it's not backwards compatible, if you can explain what you're trying to accomplish, then I'll absolutely try and help out and
give an answer. Well, they probably have Ford Sync or my Ford Touch, and they're looking at Sync 3 and getting excited.
It's not backwards compatible. So I'm assuming what he means is I have an older vehicle and I want to be able to get Sync Gen 3. Yes, I'd like to install something.
Yeah, I'm going to assume that's what it is, yes.
Certainly with a Ford F-150 2014, it's a standard 8-inch screen model. I mean, you can do it's aftermarket, not supported by Ford. It's going to be something like Pioneer or somebody in the aftermarket. Can you put stuff in? Sure. And that, I guess, to be honest with you, Roger, that kind of brings up this bigger point, right? Which is, and to Mabubu's point, when we build ship and forget, we don't think about the aftermarket. It was very interesting about 2 years ago on stage at SEMA. GM had a person there. And one of the audience members asked them, you know, why do you hate the aftermarket so much? And they were talking about the difficulties that are in the aftermarket. And the GM person responded as follows. He said, I don't hate you. It's far worse than that. I don't even know you exist. And that's the true, really, when you think about it, right, that's the issue. When you are ship and forget, all you worry about is building the product and getting it out the door, and you're done. You don't ever worry about anything else. So let's go back to Dave's question when you said, hey, there must be 13, 14, 15 customer databases. Sure there are, because warranty's got one issue, services got another issue, and they do their things. These companies do not fundamentally have transformed themselves to ship and remember. They haven't. Right. When they do, all of these problems go away. Everything we're scratching at are symptomatic issues of the different business model. Again, I want to call it a failed business model, but you're trying to have one business model with very different expectations and behaviors, and that's where this disconnect is coming. And quite frankly and honestly, if we don't fix it, if we don't get very serious about it, we're going to have more and more issues coming up, because we're going to have this clash of thinking and this clash of the businesses, and it won't actually benefit us or the industry.
Okay, I know Dave has something to say about this, but I will say, it's good to know that the automotive industry isn't hostile to the aftermarket, they're indifferent, I guess you're claiming. That might be even worse, actually. Dave, I know you've got thoughts on this subject. Are we going to have upgradable cars? And Mabubul, I'm going to come back to you, because you've suggested mandating upgradability. Dave, what are your thoughts about this? Are the auto industries truly indifferent? Is there some way to change that thinking? Is it in their interest to change that thinking?
No, it's not. As John pointed out, their business model is to sell cars. The connectedness of the vehicle is either cost avoidance, that has to do with all the warranty stuff, or it's a feature. And honestly, if your older Ford doesn't have all the features you want, Ford's answer is, we sell new cars. Come buy a new car.
Get a new car.
And you'll have a new car. And it's the way it's been with, even if you do look at aftermarket, they don't make it easy for you to add things. If you would like, you know, if you want the better tuned engine and all of that, then you buy new vehicles. So we either have to have a significantly drastic business model change where OEMs believe that they can add a lot of value to their bottom line by selling upgrades. So it's you can get the new Ford Sync in your vehicle. It's $2,000. And if people bought that, I think they'd probably sell lots of those. You are going to have to mandate that the the ECM modules and the head unit are upgradable, removable easily. And that's not a technology problem. We have the ability to plug and play stuff in. This is a business model problem.
So CloudCar actually built a module that would enable, let's imagine a world where car companies have all shifted to, you know, a Qualcomm Snapdragon or NVIDIA or Intel, central processor with one, Ethernet, unshielded twisted pair network, blah, 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 blah. And so CloudCar came up with a module that you could update that processor, you could upgrade it. But then when you think about that, how many customers would actually, like, hey, look, the car is transportation. I'm not upgrading my processor. Mabubal, what do you think of that model? How much interest there would be in that upgradability? What's the opportunity there? And I'm talking obviously hardware upgradability. I know you're all about software upgradability.
Yeah. So if you think about it, I think the auto industry can learn something from the aerospace. If you look at Dreamliner 787, it is built on a standardized FAA certified hardware. So the hardware across the different processors are exactly the same. It is one standard hardware that is certified, validated, and it is the software that is making the difference. If you hear what exactly John was talking about, as they are trying to optimize the cost in today's business model, they are not the same hardware. So they have all different capabilities of hardwares and those kind of things. So if you have standardized hardware, then it will become even easier to make a swappable, easily hardware upgrades.
Is the automotive industry anywhere near that kind of a model?
The one that has adopted that single, or as far as I know, the one that has that standardized hardware model is Tesla, as Dave talked about. So it is a hardware with that consolidate many of the microprocessors or multiple ECU. So virtualization of the ECU. So virtualization is another area that the auto industry has to get comfortable with and understanding how to run different software on a single hardware and multiple software. So yes, that is you are seeing a architecture that is coming from the aerospace into the Tesla, and I think the folks of other new OEMs who are looking at the architecture from starting from scratch will build into a standardized hardware. See, here's the bottom line. We can look back at our PC world. And if you look at the PC world, it was not until we standardized on certain OSs and certain layer where we saw the true proliferation and the growth of the PC industry. Here the OEM should be combining their forces, getting onto this new architecture and finding a transition, because you always have transition and they have spent billions of dollars. So you cannot just leave the old infrastructure out. So you have to have a transition. They should be competing on the services, and services equates directly to what John was talking about, business model. If the millennials, the generation X and Y, are looking at car as a service or transportation as a service, and car sharing is going to be the way things are going to go, they have to enable an architecture where the car sharing happens, and then the OEMs will be responsible. Their role is going to change from OEM to a fleet manager. And as a fleet manager, they have to keep the software and everything updated all the time.
So I know John is champing to jump on a number of these issues, everything from Google to upgradability to what's happening to the aftermarket. I mean, we love Tesla, but if you want to upgrade or fiddle around with your Tesla, you're going to get a message from Tesla saying, okay, all bets are off on your vehicle. You've tampered with things and you're on your own now. But John, what do you think?
Well, my immediate reaction to Google is, we say that if you had a clean sheet like Tesla, you could do this. And my contention is the OEMs could create a clean sheet anytime they wanted to, and they've chosen not to. And it's not because they can't do it. It's because they don't know how to do it, because the business models that they have at their fundamental core don't support it. So to Dave's part, when you say, you know, what are the options, you know, they're built to sell cars. That's what they're built for. They're not built to mod cars. They're not built to update cars. They're built to sell cars. That's their business model. And that business model is not the business model that you and I think want, based on all the questions you're asking in terms of being able to reach out to the vehicle, touch it later, upgrade software, or even upgrade hardware.
Okay, here's this other conflict, and I don't want to get you into your Digital Millennium Copyright Act rant, but we want cars to be upgradable. If we're going to have OEM upgradability of the car, there's probably going to be some need to preserve the integrity of that software at some level, although obviously people can tamper with their PC and still have it upgradable. So I think these two things don't have to be mutually exclusive. But now that I think that we have preserved that DMCA flexibility, I think that storm has passed. You can clarify me if I'm wrong on that. What is your thought in that respect? You know, can we have upgradability, software upgradability, and customer updatability, customization?
So let's use SyncGen 3, which is what the one of the listeners was asking about with respect to the 2014 and 2015 models, right? The new different syncs. If you tear apart the vehicle and look at them, they connect to the same CAN architectures. It's the same 8-inch screen slot. It's the same physical XYZ dimensions within the vehicle, so you can put the ECU in. So conceivably, you could have sold SyncGen 3 upgrade packages to people who had vehicles in the past, conceivably. And that thought process hasn't ever been undertaken because, again, OEMs sell vehicles. They don't sell updates. They don't sell that. So, I know we're trying to get to something more, but it's not a there are technical issues, yes, but we're trying to scratch at every single individual issue as if it were the issue that's stopping this from actually happening. And the real fundamental issue is the business model doesn't support that. They don't, you know, the people in charge.
This is like the $6 billion man, right? We have the technology. We can do this if we could just get out of our own way and break down the silos. I think I would be doing this call and conversation an injustice if I didn't bring up Google and Apple. But okay, you have one more point before we do the Google and Apple.
I said everything derives from that business model issue, and so when we talked to Mabu about trying to mandate, right, a mandate that comes in and says you must build an updatable car, that's fine. I would rather see the mandate, you must be a ship and remember company. Here are the key metrics for what that means, and whatever product you build that becomes part of our defense mechanisms or others must in fact have this business model. That I think might be the better mandate, as opposed to that the product, again, mandating the product might be a way to do it, but you got to get to the business model, and maybe a mandate doesn't work.
So, Mabubal, you agree with that interpretation?
At the end, we are driving to the same result as John is saying, but I will say that as a business owner, if you run a business and if you run a P&L, profit and loss, you always have to first take care of your existing business before you venture into a new opportunities. So I think the fear of security and compliance, being compliant and being able to sell the car, is going to be the bigger driver to enable a car to have a software update rather than a new services or new opportunity or new business model. At the end, we are driving to the same, but I think the mandate is required that every citizen's safety and compliance must be guaranteed. And that's a gold standard that cannot be left up to OEM to decide what's the level of security for car A or car B. I expect the government to come up and say, this is the gold standard, just like we have smog or on those other level, minimum level, and then people can differentiate above and beyond. To get to that minimum level, you need to have an OTA update up to a certain level. I don't think government should, or regulatory body should, extend beyond the minimum. They should do the minimum that is required in order to keep the citizens secure.
Okay, but I have to jump in here, though. Yeah. Do you see the government doing this? I'm getting a little nervous here.
I expect the regulatory body. Sorry, I meant regulatory body in this case. to say that all the cars have to have this level of... See, what we are talking about is a transformation from physical device to a digitalization.
Okay, I'm gonna interrupt you again. So we just got in the FAST Act here in the U.S., $400 million over the next 4 years committed to studying vehicle security. But it seems like since that's being channeled through USDOT and NHTSA, that their focus is almost exclusively on DSRC technology as opposed to... You know, some of the other ways like regular old Wi-Fi or cellular connections to the car or even smartphone. I'd be a little more comfortable with the government taking a leadership and a regulatory role if the government weren't so myopic. Do you have a thought about that?
So I will just say I think it is without putting anything. I mean, I don't think a technology should be cornered because of DSRC. See, V2V or V2X or V2I, this technology, vehicle-to-vehicle and infrastructure, whether it is DSRC or LTE V2V, doesn't matter. Or whether it's Wi-Fi or 3G. I think what should be how do you secure the vehicle from outside in, inside out, and around the perimeters of the vehicle. So I think that's how it should have been projected, rather than dictating a technology, secure the DSRC.
So you're a security expert, but I know Dave lives and breathes security too, which leads me to believe if he's really committed to this space, I presume he's losing some sleep, because I have the impression that we our vehicles and our industry are not very secure. What are your thoughts on this security issue? Is security by obscurity good enough? I mean, what needs to happen from your perspective?
Well, so first off, as nice as it would be to let the government to come in and come up with a set of security standards, they haven't even done that in the web. So I really don't see it'll be lobbied away to be absolutely nothing. And so in the end, I think it's going to end up being more competition sort of things, right? Who actually has the
All right, so
security.
let me ask you that. In that context, it seems to me Tesla's put a marker on the table in terms of setting a standard for the rest of the industry to recognize and either surpass or at least achieve. Do you have a sense of how other car companies are responding to Tesla's what Tesla has done with regard to security?
So the reason why, so there's two things, right? So Tesla's sold about 1/100th of the number of vehicles.
yes.
And just to remember, the reason why Macs used to be much more secure is because there were so few of them that hackers didn't try to target them. So this is...
Yeah, but Tesla's actively out there challenging the black hats. Like, come on, bring it on.
Well, so the other thing is, and this goes back to the business model. So if you think again, you know, it's always nice to look back at like the way PCs, you know, PCs used to be upgradable, but I don't know if anyone's bought anything lately, right? There is no upgrading anymore of anything, right? If you buy yourself a Surface or whatever, they're completely sealed. There is no, you don't add anything to them. You can't change processors. You can't do that. And the way that those PC manufacturers get around the update problem is they overbuild them, right? Way, way more processor power than you would need for the current release. And that's what Tesla's doing. So Tesla builds their vehicle, as was said before, kind of like a PC on wheels, and they overbuild it so that as changes come out, they can do upgrades. Other manufacturers, they build exactly to spec, which saves them money. But what it means is when they all of a sudden realize that they have to make a change, that hardware is not able to do that. And until they have the ability, until they actually invest some money into the infrastructure of the ecosystem of the vehicle, I honestly don't see them ever being able to do upgrades.
Just a couple more questions before our time is up here. John, I left you off the hook a little bit on the dealer side. I know you weren't like, you know, on the dealer network or anything, but I think from my perspective, as you probably know, dealers are at the core of this sell and forget model. They have the most to gain and the most to lose if we don't get it right. So where do you think the path leads? Does it lead towards greater dealer engagement or less along the lines of Tesla?
I mean, that's a good question. I guess if you're going to do more engagement like Tesla, right? So one of the issues is Tesla has ongoing conversations and ongoing relationships with its customers. If we can assume that Ford would do that, some people are going to ultimately need to have a physical touch point. Yep. Ford can't realistically put touch points in all the different places of the world. I mean, it's ridiculously expensive. So the dealer becomes that touch point. So if we can agree to that hypothesis, then what we're really looking at is we have to, they basically, the industry has to re-envision the role of the dealer and the OEM, and they have to re-envision how that relationship works. Right now, dealers and the OEMs are all contentious, right? Ford sold a vehicle, so they're done. Now it's up to the dealers to, you know, within a certain geographic area to fight amongst themselves. That the whole model is actually built not for ship and remember everything, even the way the dealers interact and what happens, right? The dealers sell, right? Think about it. If I drive a Ford vehicle, I'm not a Ford customer. I'm a Ford Village of Dearborn customer, of which Ford Motor Company has maybe access to that, depending on what happens or what data they bought. And that's very, very, very much something that has to be worked through and understood, because there will be requirements to touch the vehicle from time to time. I mean, the vehicles are becoming more complex, even in the physical space, that you yourself are unlikely to be able to do things with them. We're going to have electronics and others. So Ford is going to want the physical touch. Dealers want to be that physical touch, but the model today is not built in that way. And so we're going to have to figure out how, again, it goes back to the business model, which is, if it were easy, it would have already been done, right? So I don't pretend that it's easy in any way, shape, or form.
Now, I know you have something to say about the final question I have, but I'm going to give it to Mabubal and Dave to close out. And Mabubal, I'm going to ask you first. Dave, you'll get the last comment. So there's going to be a lot of talk this week about, why don't the car companies just give up and hand it over to Google and Apple and just forget about it? It's just hopeless. They can't keep pace with the CE side of the business. Just surrender, you know, resistance is futile. What is your thought about the incursion of Apple and Google? And particularly when you started talking about standard architecture, you know, for some in the industry, they would say, oh, yeah, why aren't we just using Android and forget about it?
Yeah, no, thank you for that. That is a very important question. And I think here I would like to also comment earlier when Dave said the government or the regulatory body has not created any standard for web. There is a big difference what Silicon Valley still has to learn from Detroit, which is about human safety. Web, mobile phones do not have any safety component. Let's not kid ourselves. In Silicon Valley, we know how to collect data, how to process data, how to make a secure connection, how to build a computer, how to update softwares, and all the analytics, the machine learning, the deep learning algorithms, and so on. What we do not have expertise is human safety at all different situations. At different situations, when you are driving at 80 miles an hour or under the rain, in the black ice, and all those kind of things. So there is a knowledge that Silicon Valley will try to reach out to the Detroit to understand the vehicle-specific domain knowledge. And I think that should not be underestimated. Otherwise, we'll end up having things that will crash and will cause a lot of fatality and challenges. Detroit, on the other hand, has to learn that the world has moved very quickly into a computer programmable things, which we are terming a software-defined car or software-defined vehicle, where basically software defines what you can do, what you cannot do. It's not the hardware. And so this two world has to come together. So I don't think that anybody has to throw the towel and give it to the Silicon Valley to say, hey, go run with it. I think this what may end up is the Silicon Valley-based companies will end up hiring a lot of the car OEMs' expertise to bring it in-house, to bring that expertise and to develop.
But they can't afford the real estate out there.
These Silicon Valley companies have deep pockets. That's all I want to say.
Okay, so Dave, you get the final word here. Should Apple and Google just take it over? Should we just shift to Android and throw in the towel?
Well, keep in mind, again, right, we're talking about two things. There's a part of a car that is a car, right? That's the part that has wheels and moves and that. And again, right, if you take a look at Apple, although they do design computers, they actually do outsource the manufacturing of them because that's a hard thing to do. So manufacturing a car is hard, and I think in the end, the guys that have big manufacturing plants and know how to do millions of cars will continue to do that. Although Apple and Google may actually be the OS for those vehicles. Although I'm convinced that in 10 years, the difference between an Apple car and a Google car will be the Apple car will be unbelievably gorgeous, completely sealed so that you can't touch it, and it'll cost $1 million. And the Google car will be free, but it'll randomly take you to stores where it wants you to shop.
Okay. With that apocalyptic vision, I'm going to hand things back to Carmen. Mabubal and Dave and John, thank you very much for taking the time to share your thoughts on this Saturday morning. Yeah. Okay, so here's a question. Where does the independent repair network fall into this model? Okay, John, I think that has your name on it.
This is a broader answer, a way broader question than we have time for. But in short, if we're not careful, the independent repair shop is going to go away. Not because they want to go away, but because the OEM's behaviors, as we evolve down this path, will make it such that the independent repair shop will be very challenged in order to be able to make either A, keep up, or and B, stay involved. From the standpoint of tools changing, security, more and more is in software. Software is not going to be shared with the independent repair shops. There's talk about encrypting the buses, encrypting communications. Once that happens, it's unlikely that independent repair shops will get the security keys. So again, if we're not careful, we're on a path. We're on a path with all the behaviors right now that the OEMs will be in direct and absolute control of who gets to work on a car, who gets to touch the car, when can the car get touched. And in that world, it will be unlikely that there will be the truly independent. There might be Ford identified workshops, but there'll be very, very few independent guys who can just come up and say, I'm ASE certified, let me start working on the vehicle.
By the way, we have a question about the presence of the auto industry in Silicon Valley. I think, Mabubal, you probably have the best perspective on this one. My sense is every OEM in Tier 1 has opened an office in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I think there are more than 18 OEMs and many, many, more than 20 Tier 1s are there. And space is short, but there's a lot of, almost everybody's here, whether they're from Japan or from Korea or from China or from Europe or from Detroit area. Almost everybody's there, and that will continue to grow.
And the final question we had from listeners was, what are everybody's plans for CES? So I'll be chairing the Consumer Telematics Show on Tuesday before the main CES event starts, and then I'll be running around like a chicken with my head off for 3 or 4 days trying to see as much as I can, soak it up with my colleagues. But each of you, so Dave, Mabubal, John, will do it in that order. So Dave, you're not going, but your organization is represented.
Yeah, we've got quite a few folks from Covisint that are going to be there, and with our partnership with Hyundai, and that you can find us at their booth.
So Covisint's working with Hyundai, GM?
GM, yeah, and some other OEMs.
Okay, players to be named later, all right. And Mabubal, are you going to be at CES?
I'm going to be at CES. We have quite a lot of journalists lined up. We are showing in 4 different areas. One, we are showing what you can do with a smartphone. So we call it a smartphone-based software update for the vehicle with a Bluetooth connectivity that will be on a RAM 1500. We are also showing embedded solution, embedded OTA on an Android OS, both for CTS Cadillac as well as Audi A6 for 2016 vehicle. We are also showing the HMI update for a Wrangler. And then we will show a security demo as well, which basically shows how to stop reverse engineering so that, you know, dictionary attacks and other attacks. So even if you secure, people have the car, so they can take all the time in the world to reverse engineer. So how do you protect that? And basically that goes into our theme of bringing security expertise, which are outside in different domains that we feel are valuable in the auto industry. We are bringing those into the auto and providing a different level of security. And this one comes from the securing content and digital right management. And we are bringing that type of reverse engineering protection around our OTA security.
I think I'm not sure, but I think the FAST Act actually tried to criminalize reverse engineering. It may not have done that completely. I'm not completely certain of that, but I think they tried to make it a criminal activity, even though sometimes that's a white hat activity. John, CES?
I'm there. Similar to you, I'm actually hosting or moderating a panel on CTS Tuesday. Wednesday morning, I'm on all three panels for the automotive track. And then, you know, customer client meetings and sort of, you know, networking. So,
okay. Yeah. With that, I'm going to send it back to Carm. You want to take me out, Carm, and take the panel out?
I'm blown away. I just don't know what to say. I have learned so much. I actually was shaking in my boots a little bit, hearing all my great automotive aftermarket guys on the side say, wait a minute, we're not going away. Oh, geez.
Well, and Carm, I saw what they were saying there, right? And I know I get the mindset, right? We're in the service business, but there are actions on the horizon that other industries are already going through that are showing that this will be, you know, again, that's why I said if it's unchecked, if they encrypt buses, if they start doing things and putting more and more functions in the software, you can envision a vehicle that is not serviceable or the minimum amount of service that could be done. And most of it's going to have to be done then by the OEM or some other authorized area. That's where I'm getting it.
You make such a great point. We've had a dialogue on the audio version of the podcast and on our videos about where are the future technicians going to come from. They're going to come from the science, technology, engineering, and math programs in the schools. The training is going to have to change. And Frank Luitz just said on the right-hand side here, he said, hey, they're going to become network engineers. So It will evolve. I don't think the industry is going away. There's 4 million people that work in the auto care aftermarket. 4 million people. It's like in the top 5 of GDP. So I think it will survive some way, especially the point that you all made is that when's the new business model going to come out? The tier ones, they keep falling over their feet. And then there was another thing I wrote down here is, will Tesla survive? I was just curious about the fact that I read some negative press on what they do and how they do what they do. And it would be a shame that that wouldn't, you know, wouldn't be a model to be envious of. And especially the way we are so confident. Mabubel, you bring the point. My phone all of a sudden stops and updates, and I'm a happy camper for it because I got some of the latest stuff. Yet our cars need to get there too. And I am so impressed. This is beyond belief. Roger, I know you're still listening. I have to thank you so much. What a moderator. We should do this again. Maybe we should do a post CES and say, hey, let me tell you, here's what we said before CES. We should come back and talk about, well, I may have changed my mind on a few things, but you guys are geniuses and scientists, and I thank you so much. Again, Dave Miller, John Ellis, and Mabubel Alam. And this is going to be one of those incredible episodes that I think people are going to listen to over and over again. Thank you so much. And by the way, thanks to Federal Mogul and Guru Garage for sponsoring today's podcast. Bye, guys.
Thank you, everybody, and Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Thank you all so much. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.